You're listening to Maneuvering Mondays, a podcast about transforming work culture. In this first part of the episode, we follow the fictional story of Marie, who's an HR manager in the edtech company Zebra Apps, as she maneuvers the challenges of transforming their work culture.
In the canteen, Marie put orange sauce on some rice, the sorry leftovers of what used to be butter chicken. She poured the remaining peanuts straight from their bowl to top off the rice. Even the broccoli salad was reduced to a couple of leaves at the bottom of the bowl. The head chef popped his head out of the kitchen door and caught Marie's glance. "You sure have grown the past year, huh?" he said, looking at Marie's plate. "I lost track of time today," she replied. "I'll have to set an alarm on my phone if I want some of the actual food." The chef laughed. "Don't you worry, we are hiring additional kitchen staff this month to keep up," he said. "Mark shared your hiring projections for the coming year." "Phew!" He gestured an upward growing curve with his hand. "Yep, we sure are growing," Marie said, and walked over to one of the tables that was more or less clean. If only we could keep the people we already have, Marie thought, growth would be much easier to sustain. At that moment, Natalie rushed in, grabbing a plate and heading straight for the bowl of butter chicken. She picked up the ladle and poured some sauce on her plate. Then she looked at her plate and put it down on the table. She picked up a new plate, grabbed three slices of bread and put butter on them. Then she walked over and sat down across from Marie. "Slim pickings," she said, as she took a big bite of bread. Marie nodded as she finished up her rice and orange sauce. "I heard you spoke to Mark today," Natalie went on, now on her final piece of bread. "Yeah, he came by my office," said Marie. "Look, his pride was hurt," Natalie said. Marie looked at her, tilting her head in disbelief. "His pride?" Marie repeated. "You told him that I asked you to fix the retention problem," Natalie said. "Yes," Marie said. "Now, you and I know that Mark is not a fixer," Natalie continued, "but let's not make him feel threatened." "Am I making him feel threatened?" Marie said. Natalie laughed. "Just don't rub his nose in it," Natalie concluded. Before Marie could respond, Natalie got up to bust her plate without glancing back at Marie. "Rubbing his nose?" Marie thought. "I'm not rubbing his nose in anything, as if he is some kind of delicate flower." She clenched her jaw and could feel her fist tightening. She looked down at her hands and flung them open. She closed her eyes and took a deep breath. Her jaw relaxed. "The only thing that matters is figuring out why people are leaving," she thought. "That is within my control," she told herself. She decided to step by Natalie's office on the way back from lunch. Not to confront her, but to share her preliminary results. She grabbed her laptop from her office and walked down the hall. Natalie's door was closed. Marie glanced through the glass next to the door and saw Mark inside. Natalie saw Marie and waved her in. "Great, you're both here," Marie started, wanting to be inclusive towards Mark. "I wanted to show you my initial findings."
"You have findings already?"
Mark said, sounding surprised.
"Yeah, I spent the day benchmarking us against our competitors," she said. Marie pulled up the presentation and connected her laptop to the screen next to Natalie's desk. She took Mark and Natalie through the three slides she had prepared.
"So we pay people too much," Natalie said with a big smile. "That we can fix."
"Free soda, eh?" Mark said, writing something down in his notebook.
"It is probably not the soda," Marie remarked and was about to continue, but caught Natalie looking straight at her. Natalie shook her head almost imperceptibly. Marie stopped talking, leaving her sentence hanging. Mark looked at Marie, waiting for her to complete the sentence.
"It doesn't explain why people are leaving," Natalie said, resting her head on her hand.
"This explains why people should be staying." Both Marie and Mark looked at Natalie. Marie blushed. Natalie was right. This concluded nothing.
"Have you looked at the exit interview reports?" Mark asked.
Marie looked at Mark, considering his point.
"No, I was not aware that we documented exit interviews," Marie said.
"If people came to me, I could follow the process,"
Mark said with a tentative smile on his face. Why are you the only one who knows about this process? Marie thought to herself, but said instead, Would you be willing to share them with me? I'm happy to look into it. Natalie nodded approvingly at Marie. Marie felt like taking a shower. Mark promised to send Marie a link to the location of the files as Marie exited Natalie's office. Marie felt almost dizzy walking down the hallway, but she couldn't quite pin down the origin of her emotional vertigo. The feeling of distrust she felt towards Mark was starting to spread to how she felt towards Natalie, and towards herself. She entered her office and sat down in her office chair, plugging the laptop into the docking station. A knock on the door made her look up. It was Esser, the benefits manager. Marie looked at Esser, and for a moment she feared this would be one of those end-of-the-month conversations. But then she noticed that Esser was hugging a stack of papers with both hands. I've got your printouts for you, Esser said. My printouts? Marie asked, raising an eyebrow. Mark said you wanted prints of exit interviews from the past year, Esser said. Why would he ask you to print stuff for him? Marie said, and then she realized she had said that out loud. Yeah, Esser shrugged and put the stack down on Marie's desk. As Esser was about to leave, Marie asked, Do you know where these files are located on our drive? Sure, I just printed them, Esser said, pointing to the stack. Then she showed Marie the location of the files in their HR folder. See? There, Esser said. Arranged by month. Is Mark the only one who documents these? Marie asked. He doesn't document this, Esser scoffed. It's either me or Paul. But Paul is head of HR operations, Marie interjected. Esser looked at her. I just mean that it would make more sense that someone from my team did this, Marie tried to explain. We are usually the ones people talk to about these things anyway. I have no interest in writing down people's complaints, Esser said, shaking her head. But Mark said that he wanted HR ops to do this. Marie looked at Esser, trying to understand why Mark would want their benefits specialist filling out exit interview forms. Anyway, I've got to go, Esser said. Mark asked me to look into the taxation of free soda. What? Marie opened her mouth, but Esser was already heading out the door. Marie raised her arms halfway and grunted in frustration. Then she saw the stack of paper on her desk and pulled it towards her. Under the stack of forms, Marie noticed her phone. It had 5 unanswered calls, all from Anne. Marie picked up her phone and looked at the unanswered calls. All were made with 15-minute intervals, plus or minus a couple minutes. That's Anne for you, Marie thought. Always the perfectionist. Everything is a system. Before calling her back, Marie decided to look through Anne's exit interview. For context. Not to put the task off. She looked at the top file. It was Simon's exit interview, documented by Paul. When in the world did Simon speak to Paul? Marie thought to herself. She checked the date. His exit interview was yesterday. Why did he speak with me this morning, then? Marie thought. Simon's reasons for leaving were stated briefly. Disgruntled employee, leaving without a new job, put on garden leave with a full salary until the final day of employment. Marie remembered back to her conversation with Simon that morning. This did not feel like an accurate summary of why he was leaving. But then Marie thought of her own notes after speaking to Simon and said out loud, Fair enough. She leafed through the forms. March, February, January, December. Anne had resigned what seemed like an eternity ago. Marie found the first forms in the stack dating back to March the year before. Had Anne left before March? Marie decided to check the folder with the exit interviews. It was not in the March folder, so she checked February and January. She was sure that Anne was still here in December. She was in the Christmas picture, wearing a Rudolph sweater with everyone else. Then Marie checked the April and May folders. There it was, in the May folder. Anne Kelly. Not a full year ago, yet it was not printed by Esser, Marie thought to herself. She then scratched the back of her neck, trying not to read anything into this omission. But why did Mark not just send her a link to the folders like he promised? She pushed the thought aside and opened Anne's file. It was longer than Simon's interview. She scrolled down and fixed her eyes on the reason for leaving section. It said, "In the past year, Zebra Apps has changed dramatically. Used to be a company with principals and employees that were willing to go the extra mile to get things done. Now we are employing Excel sheet types and peacocks that do not contribute any real value to the company. The day that ASLA was declined for compassionate use was the day I knew I no longer could stay." Marie thought back to the ASLO incident. Who documented this interview? Marie thought to herself. She scrolled to the bottom. Mark. Marie widened her eyes. She sat for a minute looking at the document. Then she leafed through the stack of papers again. She found Jason's interview, conducted just today by Esser. She started reading the reason for leaving section. It began, "In the past year, Zebra Apps stopped being the company I was hired to work for." Marie stopped reading. In the past year? She got her yellow highlighter out and circled "in the past year." Then she went through all the March exit interviews. 3 out of 5 mentioned "in the past year." She scanned through the interviews from February, January, December. She made 2 piles of documents. One pile mentioned something that happened in the past year as a reason, and the other pile where it was not obviously stated. The piles were equally high. She read the files that did not mention the past year again and moved a couple to the in the past year pile, where the phrasing was different but the intent was the same. Now, the in the past year pile was the highest. Marie glanced through the files from the full year. The in the past year pile was now a third higher than the other pile. There you have it, Marie thought. Something in the past year is making people leave. Marie looked out the window. It was dark outside, and she looked at her phone. 1930. She yawned and picked up her bag to pack her laptop and notebook. Walking out of the office, she glanced back at her 2 stacks of files. What has happened in the past year? She asked herself. Right then, she remembered about the coffee stain in the conference room. The cleaners have probably washed that off by now, she thought to herself. It's fine. She nodded, as if to convince herself. Then she walked down the stairs to the parking lot. ASLO was over 6 years old, but it had only reached product market fit once the pandemic made classroom teaching impossible. Developed to support asynchronous learning in schools, it was the key to Zebra Apps' rapid expansion in the past years. Not only did it become a popular tool during lockdown, they also found themselves riding on a paradigm shift in teaching methods. Teachers as instructors were on the way out, and teachers as coaches and facilitators were on the way in. This is exactly the shift that ASLO supported. It helped teachers curate content from both traditional publishers and social learning providers for the students to consume as homework, and supported in-class interaction by providing teachers with dashboards of the student's progress. It even provided suggestions for teachers on how to help a student progress, powered by their AI algorithm. This AI was their most prized intellectual property and the reason why they had strategically chosen to expand into hardware and build their own data center. They wanted the algorithm to be unhackable. It was part of their commitment to ethical software development. "Children's brains are not for commercial gain," was the slogan Jason used to finish his presentations with. The promise of protecting the data generated by children was one of the reasons why they were having success in Germany, a country notorious for their skeptical view on digitization. Anne was the original creator of ASLO. The first version was delivered to a private school several years before the pandemic hit. The principal of the school was a recent hire, and he was excited to get ahead of the curve on how teaching methods were developing. His teachers did not agree. They preferred preparing each lesson's content as they had always done, tailored to the specific class on any given day. After the implementation failed, a maths teacher explained that preparing for a class was the part of the job that he enjoyed the most. He said that students can kill a really well-prepared class. ASLO was shelved, and Anne went on to create a number of successful digital products for schools. "This is the part I don't get," Marie said to her husband while holding her toothbrush. Anne was the most successful product developer at Zebra. Why would she leave just because of a disagreement? Marie's husband, Thomas, mumbled, "Oh, I don't know." Not because he was disinterested, but because he was brushing his teeth. Marie followed suit, but couldn't stop thinking about Anne. She rinsed her mouth and went on, "Aslo is a huge success. If something I create becomes the most important product in my company, I would stay to see how it pans out." Thomas was drying his face with a towel. "It depends on what is important to you," he said. "Success may not mean material success." He then whacked Marie playfully with the wet towel. "You're the one working in HR," he said. "You should know these things." "Oh, you cheek," Marie laughed and grabbed the towel out of his hands. Thomas came in closer and put his arm around Marie. "Why are you obsessing over her anyway?" he asked. "It just doesn't add up," she said. Before turning the lamp on her bedside table off, Marie checked her phone. 23:30. She instinctively checked the news. Then she suddenly felt curious. She tapped the Twitter app and searched for Jason's profile. "Here is another thing that doesn't add up," she said. "What?" Thomas said, looking up from his book. "Look, WarrenPeace_Jason, she said. "He changed his handle." "Dostoevsky," he said. "Hmm," she said, and put her phone down on the nightstand. The next day, Marie did not have to turn the alarm off in the office. On Fridays, she was the one to drop their daughter off at kindergarten. On the way, she would pass a drive-through bakery and pick up cinnamon buns for her team. When she entered the kitchenette downstairs, everyone was already there. Marie put the brown bag down on the kitchen island, and Sheila tore the bag apart while she kept telling her story. From what Marie could gather, the leadership training provider they were partnering with was not cut out for working with their senior leadership. "And then Natalie told him to take that card off her damn wall," Sheila said, to thundering laughter from the others. "Did he take it down?" Marie asked. "He took it down and called a break," Sheila said. Sheila looked at Marie. "Where were you all day yesterday?" she asked. "I went down a rabbit hole," Marie said, "trying to figure out why people are leaving." Sheila nodded. "Hey, did you know about the exit interviews that Paul and Esther document?" Marie asked. "Esther mentioned those to me," Sheila said. "She is not a fan." "I will need to talk to Mark about those," Marie said. "So, why are people leaving?" Eric chimed in. "Not because of salary or benefits," Marie said. "We pay top of the market," Sheila said. "Yeah, I verified with my network," Marie said. "Except for free soda, we are on par or above our competitors." "Probably not the soda," Eric chuckled. "I read through the exit interviews from the past year," Marie continued, "and found that 3/5 mentioned that they were leaving because we have changed in the past year." "What happened in the past year?" Joe asked. "You tell me," Marie said. "I've been thinking about it since last night." "Berlin is happening," Sheila said. "Aslo is in 70% of schools," Eric said. "The pandemic ended," Joe continued. "We've grown by a third," Marie offered. "And quit," Eric said. Eric looked at Marie. "Have you spoken to her?" he asked. "She called me yesterday," Marie answered. "I need to call her back." Eric nodded. "We've hired a sales team," Sheila said, "and new managers." Marie looked at Sheila. She was right. They had grown by a third, but the third was a new branch of their business. The development team was more or less intact. They had only replaced the people who left, not added net new members. The growth occurred in the commercial organization and in the operations teams. "We've also got the new strategy," Eric said, interrupting Marie's train of thought. "It's all about growth now," Joe sighed. Marie nodded and took a bite of her cinnamon bun. Fridays were her favorite. She loved her team and hearing their stories from the week gone by. When surrounded by them, she felt at ease. When she had started at Zebra Apps, the entire HR organization met up on Fridays together. They were fewer back then, and she was the only person in development HR. Before Esther and Paul joined, Hannah was the only person in HR operations. She left when Esther joined and took all the complex work related to salaries. Hannah was left with just running the monthly numbers and said that her brain was turning to mush. Marie had tried to get Paul to divide the work along functional lines so that both Esther and Hannah could contribute to both benefits and salary. Around that time, Paul had concluded that Friday breakfast was too cliche for an HR function and no longer wanted to join. Soon, only Marie's team showed up. Back in her office, Marie summed up what her team had said on the whiteboard. New managers hired. Sales team. Berlin. New strategy. Growth. Aslo. She thought back to the Aslo incident with Anne. It would have inhibited their growth for sure had they pursued Anne's suggestion. She had suggested, strongly so, that they offer Aslo for free to all of Ukraine. A lot of teachers are women, and women had fled the war. They were separated from their students, who may also be on the move. Using Aslo, it did not matter where the teachers and students were. They could continue their curriculum where they had left off. No generation of children would need to experience the gap in education like happened during the war in Yugoslavia. It would have taken all the spare capacity in their data center to provide this service. And who knew for how long? Natalie would have none of it. Suddenly, it dawned on Marie that they now had spare capacity in their data center that they did not know how to use. That was the whole purpose of the business case that Simon was working with the business analyst on. She took her phone out of her coat pocket and called Simon. "Hey, Marie," Simon said. "You know I won't be keeping this number." "The spare capacity in our data center. How much do we have?" she asked. "Well, hello to you too," Simon said. "Is Natalie pouting that business case again?" "No, I..." Marie said, looking at the whiteboard and lowering her voice. "How much capacity would we have needed to provide Aslo to Ukraine?" Simon went quiet for a minute. "It would have been more than enough," he said. "So..." Marie hesitated. "So it is a load of bullshit," Simon concluded. Marie didn't know what to say next. "Have you spoken to Anne?" Simon asked. "Why does everyone want me to speak to Anne so badly?" Marie muttered. "Well, you can keep going in circles if you prefer," Simon said. Marie felt as if he was smiling. "Have you seen Jason's new Twitter handle?" Marie asked, changing the subject. "I was the one who suggested it," Simon said with a chuckle. "How does that happen? How does someone just change their beliefs?" Marie asked, suddenly wondering why she was asking Simon this. "War happened," Simon said. Marie nodded in her phone. "You know his girlfriend's family is from Ukraine?" Simon added. "No, oh my God, I didn't know," Marie said, suddenly feeling ashamed of herself. "He was the one who suggested to Anne that we should offer up Aslo," Simon said. "But we didn't," Marie said. "No, we didn't want to inhibit our growth," Simon said, and Marie could feel him gesturing air quotes. "He's a good kid," Simon said. "He's been trying to help out in his own way." "What do you mean?" Marie said. "He tried to join their foreign intelligence force," Simon said, "but they didn't really need a UX guy." "Is that why he is joining the defense contractor?" Marie asked. "He didn't tell me, but that's a pretty good guess," Simon said. "What about you? Are you joining the army?" Marie joked. "I really am leaving because I can't take it anymore," Simon said, as calmly as Marie has ever heard him. "And what is it that you can't take?" Marie asked. "The hypocrisy, the bureaucracy, the processes," Simon answered, but then went quiet. "I just don't feel like we are on the same team anymore," he went on, "or that we are playing by the same rules." They spoke for a couple more minutes. When they hung up, Marie added, "Not same team," and "not same rules," to her whiteboard. She felt warm inside after speaking to Simon, and not her usual rising anger. Almost the same warmth that she had felt during breakfast. Suddenly, Jason's choice made sense. It was more important for him to make a difference than the money he made or the perks he got. His values mattered more. That thought made Marie stop up. Jason was a pacifist when he joined the company, but when the war in Ukraine broke out, he cared more about keeping his family there safe than he cared about being a pacifist. Marie heard footsteps approaching her door. She looked up to find Mark stepping into her office. "What's all this?" he asked, pointing at the two stacks of exit interviews on the table. Marie rolled her eyes. "You told Esser to print the exit interviews instead of sending me the damn link," she almost shouted. Mark considered her statement for a minute. Then he said quietly, "Marie, that is not true. I asked Esser to send you the link." Marie looked at him, baffled. "Why didn't you just send me the link?" she asked. "I haven't done an exit interview in months," he said. "Esser does this all the time." He walked over to the whiteboard and looked at Marie's notes. "So it's our culture," he said. "Our culture?" Marie said. "Not same team, not same rules," he read. "Adding on lots of new people, growing fast." Marie looked at him in bewilderment. "You're right," she said. "Well, that's an easy fix," he said. Marie could not tell if he was being sarcastic or sincere. "I've got to make a call," she said. "All right," he said. "Well done." He smiled at her, turned around, and went out the door. Marie had the same bad feeling in her gut as she always had after speaking with Mark. It was nothing specific. He had said the right things. But somehow, she always felt off balance after speaking with him. Wondering, feeling insane.
You're listening to Maneuvering Mondays, a podcast about transforming work culture. Tune in when we invite guests to comment on this part of Marie's journey. Thanks to Tiffany Lam, our wonderful speaker of the audiobook about Marie from Zebra Apps. What are your thoughts on Marie's situation? Have you had a similar experience? And what would you have done? Join the conversation on our LinkedIn page and let's maneuver Mondays together.